Okay, this session, as you know, is labelled The Business of Slavery, Economic History in the Classroom. It should, in fact, have a question mark, I think, after the Economic History in the Classroom, because really it's a challenge for us, but also, I think, particularly for you, to bring this economic history into schools in a way that is going to work. We talked yesterday briefly about the tendency for people to put their heads down around economic history. That's mirrored in undergraduate. It's a general thing. And it's completely understandable. The economics profession has not served itself particularly well in the last 30 years. It's pursued things that were completely discredited in 2008, and it has not been able to adjust to that. So it matters, I think. It matters because what's at stake here, in the end, is who built modern Britain? And given the answer to that, is it possible that Britain belongs in some sense to a different grouping, different series of groupings of people than at least historically we've assumed? And we'll come back to that in the context of thinking about Britain and the Industrial Revolution, the role of slavery in that. In the course pack, this is labelled as mass commercialisation, this notion of the business of slavery, the economics of slavery. And in terms of dimensions, so that you have those, and again, I think through the Kate's labours, you can get access to the Transatlantic Slave Trade Database, for example. That will provide you very quickly with summary tables that will give you a one-page snapshot of the slave trade for your pupils. But orders of magnitude, about 12.5 million Africans are known to have been embarked in West Africa and moved across the Atlantic in the long course of the history of the slave trade. And as we talked about yesterday, that history spans from 1526, the first known direct voyage, all the way through to 1866. Britain's stepping out in 1807 is only part of the story. Of those 12.5 million people, about 11.2 or 11.3 million are known to have disembarked from the Atlantic. In other words, a million people died in the Middle Passage in this extended period of history. Of those 12.5 million embarked, Britain accounts for about 25%. 3.2 million is the known figure for British embarkations. And by that it means ships that originated in Britain and were equipped and financed by British owners. That's the measure that the Transatlantic Slave Trade Database uses. The single biggest component of movement of enslaved people is effectively by the Portuguese and indeed their successors, the Brazilians, from the more southerly states of Western Africa to Brazil. And in total, that accounts for almost 6 million of the 12.5 million people embarked. So the single most important strand of the slave trade is in fact not the British experience. This is not a diminution of Britain's role or of the importance of slavery to Britain, which of course is a different question than Britain's importance to slavery. But historically, the slave trade...
How much did it account for, the single most important strand?
It's about 5.8, we see, of the Lusophone, the Brazilian Portuguese related trade. And of course, that has huge implications for Brazil and its society and culture and history today. The other parts of that 12.5 million are made up by the French, the Danes, this is the Swedes. This is a European project. The slave trade is a European project. It's part of the explosion of Europe into the world and the origins of the modern world system. And Britain, as I say, is a significant and integral part of that process. What it entails, of course, is the commodification of people. That's exactly what slavery, chattel slavery, represents. And it works economically in two ways. One is the turning of people into commodities. These 12.5 million people are bought and sold, and they're bought and sold again when they're in the Caribbean. So that simple fact is easily overlooked when you move to talking about economics, because you're dealing in the realm of abstraction, but of course in the end what is the base of this are those people who are being bought and sold. And the second component, of course, is the expropriation of their labour under duress, under conditions of violence and coercion. And you would occasionally see in the literature suggestions that slavery was not profitable. At various points in history, that's been true, that it's been unprofitable. But you know that slavery is individually profitable because enslaved Africans have a price. At any given moment in the slave system, you can buy and sell a person. And that positive value can only flow from the economic interest to their purchaser, or possibly a non-economic value to domination and sexual exploitation. And that is a component part of this, and I'm focused today on the economic part of this analysis.
So are you saying that that argument is a bit of a misnomer in terms of how that's been used sometimes, that slavery wasn't profitable? But so slavery, are you trying to say, is always individually profitable to the person buying and selling, but it may not have been as a macro system profitable?
Individual enslaved people are units of value because they have a price.
Yeah.
You know that, and therefore, capital economics tell you supply and demand, but actually people want them, so you have to explain that. My comment about slavery being unprofitable is that all the way through slavery, the slave owners are saying, this is a terrible business to be in. We're losing money, we need help.
Yeah.
British slave owners say that every year, doesn't matter whether it's 1650 or 1832, they're always making that case. We know from the evidence that we can assemble that individually, some of them are making extraordinary amounts of money and some are losing money. But on balance, we can see that the individuals, individual wealth is being created. There's no question about that. The broader question is, what is the importance of this, the significance of this for the British economy? And then you can only argue the counterfactual, if there were no slavery, would we have been better off? And I'll come back to that in a few moments. But you should regard this as a system that is designed to be an economic system and a system that worked. So there are three things I want to cover relatively briefly this morning with a couple of handouts. One is, what is this system and how does it work? The second is, how important was it? And the third is the extent to which that importance is remembered or recorded in British memory today, and particularly by some of the firms who were beneficiaries of this system.